Oh, I love that music. And as you know, that's written by Jorg Koring, who designed it for our show. Thank you, Jorg. If you like it, you can go to our website and hear more.
Thank you, Jorg.
Carol, what is being done to stop the trade? Besides Bo Derek, who else is involved in this?
Harrison Ford is doing a public service announcement about this. There have been a number of celebrities, people that I don't really know, but that are very well known in China and Taiwan and, you know, Asia and places where this is happening. And what they're doing is going out into the public and doing these public service announcements to let people know that, you know, the celebrities, the people they're looking up to, are caring about animals. And so they're bringing this into mainstream America for us. And they're getting attention from the media because an awful lot of time the press will say, you know, they wouldn't have covered this at all had it not been for the fact that there was a celebrity there. So I think it's wonderful that they're using that status to get these issues out in front of everyday America, or actually the entire world.
Well, and we all know that American actors are internationally known. Are some of these some of their commercials being shown internationally? Did you say that, or?
Yes, they are being shown internationally, and we've asked them to send us copies of them that we can put on the website, but we haven't gotten them yet.
Oh, is it making a difference?
It is.
That's terrific.
You know, we're seeing so much attention right now to the fact that the tigers are disappearing in the wild. They've dropped from being 5 or 6 years ago, there were thought to be some 5,000 to 6,000 of them, and now there's only 1,200 to 1,500 of them left. And, you know, they're saying the poachers are killing one a day.
But you're opposed to, even though the numbers are dropping, you're opposed to breeding them in captivity. Why is that?
Because there's no habitat to send them back to. And, you know, if they could cure the problem as far as there being enough real estate for these animals to survive in that they weren't being poached, they breed very quickly, and reestablishing their numbers is not a problem. But they're just too intelligent to be bred for life in cages. And even though it's going to be really sad that we're going to lose the tiger, I would rather lose the tiger than to see the shell of the tiger that is left in the cage when you do that to them.
Which you've seen firsthand,
yes.
Haven't you?
So what would another option be so we can, you know, get the population?
How do you see the, is there a fix to the problem?
You know, the only thing that ever works in saving these animals in the wild is where you involve the local people in such a way that it makes economical sense to them. And
right, money talks. Across the board.
Always does.
It does, and that's the only thing. I mean, you can't go in and say, this is bad, you shouldn't do it because the rest of the world wants tigers. You have to give them an economic reason to want to protect those tigers. And we're doing that in South America with the Amerindian tribes, where, you know, it's just recently been opened up in Guyana, and so these people are coming in and they're logging, they're buying the, you know, beautiful parrots from the poachers. And what we've done is we've worked out a deal with the Amerindians saying, we'll send tourists down there and have them do eco tours, and you can take them on walks through the jungle, and they can go swim in these beautiful rivers and lakes that you have, and all the money will go to your tribe as long as you do not let the loggers come in and cut down the forest, and you don't sell the animals, all the wildlife, off to people that want to make pets out of it.
That is brilliant.
Yes.
That's great. And your daughter, Jamie Veronica, is really involved in this, isn't she?
This was her project. She's 27 years old.
Oh, my daughter's 28 and also an animal, huge animal advocate as well. Yay, we did something right, Carol.
And is she the one that just took the massage?
Yes, my daughter just got certified in animal massage therapy and animal acupressure. And
that
she just did the essential oil treatment and massage on both of my animals and Phyllis's just this last weekend were her case studies.
Yes, I wanted to be her next case study after that because it worked very well on my German Shepherd puppy.
Tell us how you're saving the snow leopard. That's something that I don't really know much about, a snow leopard.
They're one of the most endangered animals, and they are different from all of the other cats in that they live in an area that almost nobody else wants to live. They live up in the Himalayas where it's always cold. They live above the permafrost line. But the problem is that there are some people who live there, and they're mostly herders. And when a snow leopard takes one of their sheep or one of their goats or their yaks, it's the world to them. And so back in 1997, my daughter, again, when she was only, probably 12 at the time, came to me and she said, you know, if we could sell these woolly mittens and scarves that these people make, the money would go to the people in Mongolia, and then they would protect the snow leopards rather than kill them. And she kept pushing this and pushing this, and we started doing it. We're now the world's second largest retailer of these items that are made by the local people. And what that does is it gives them five times the income that they would have ordinarily.
That is unbelievable.
And you have a repercussion if a snow leopard is killed, don't you? What happens to the entire village?
Anybody kills a snow leopard, or if a snow leopard disappears, the entire village is thrown out of the program. So they're all watching each other, and they're all trying to protect the snow leopards rather than taking any kind of retribution.
That is, how did you come up with some things? Because most people just talk about it and they don't get involved, or at least have an intelligent way to make everybody happy.
The Snow Leopard Trust is the one that came up with that plan, and they're actually based out of Seattle. They're over on your side of the world. And they were the ones that contacted us back in 1997 and wanted us to sell these mittens and scarves. And we thought it was just crazy, but, you know, we tried, and sure enough, we started selling this stuff because people really wanted to do something for the snow leopard, and it's blossomed from there.
Do you have kind of a program where you can help other people who can borrow your ideas that are working?
An awful lot of the people that are on our newsletter list and on our e-zine, we send our e-zine out once a month and our newsletter goes out four times a year, but a lot of the people that are on there are other sanctuaries, and we offer things, you know, like a tip of the day for fundraising, or, you know, anything that we learn, we put on the website and we send out to these people because we don't want people having to reinvent the wheel.
How can they sign up for your e-zine and your newsletter?
If they go to bigcatrescue.org, in the left-hand bar where all of the links are, there's a little sign-up place right there.
I have a question. They call them snow leopards, and this is sort of leading into my other question. Are they white? Is that reason why? And then I wanted you to talk a little bit about white tigers.
The snow leopard is kind of a very pale gray with charcoal spots, and they're built to, you know, they're designed to just disappear in their habitat. If you guys saw any of the recent series that came out, it wasn't the Planet in Peril series, but it was the one that came out before that. There was some absolutely stunning footage of the snow leopards hunting for the first time ever. Planet Earth, that was the name of the thing.
Oh, I did not see that.
Oh, it's worth buying. I went out and bought the whole set just to get that one piece of snow leopards hunting because nobody had ever seen it before because they're so reclusive.
Wow. Wow. And you started talking a little bit before about the white tigers, that they're overbred.
The white tiger doesn't occur in the wild unless you've got a very small inbred population. And back in the 40s, that's what happened. There was a small pocket of tigers that had become inbred, kind of like the Florida panther is very inbred. And when you have to have the gene for the white coat on both sides, which means both parents are really inbred, in order for that to show up. And then what a lot of people don't realize is that white coat is also tied to the optical nerve, so that every white tiger is cross-eyed. Same thing with white lions. They're all cross-eyed. Whether they look cross-eyed or not, they can't see clearly.
You know what? That's the ones that are in the Mirage in Vegas, where those two, I forgot the names of them, that do work with the tigers. When I'm in Vegas for work, I always go and look at those white tigers. They're beautiful, and they are cross-eyed.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And that's why they're preferred by magicians and people that use them for props, because, you know, they put them up on the stool and they can't see where they're going, so they just sit there.
Oh,
that's so sad.
They're so inbred that they're retarded, and so they don't have as strong a killing instinct when they're adults as they would if they were stronger cats. And what has happened is that one that they took from the wild, they would never live in the wild because, you know, it's nature is survival of the fittest, and so they would die before they ever became adults. But this one cub was taken from his mother. They shot the mother and shot the other cubs to get this one cub, sent it to a zoo. They bred him and bred him until they bred him to his own daughter. And then all of the line was so inbred that the entire Bengal tiger population was completely wiped out in this country. And so what they started, because, you know, after a while they just start being born dead. And so the zoos started hybridizing the Bengal tigers and the Siberian tigers in order to have something that was white that would live. And so now all of the Bengal tigers that you see in zoos have some Siberian tiger in them, which makes them useless for any kind of conservation breeding. And it's just, they do it because people will pay to see it, and people will pay to see it because they don't know that
they're not educated.
So, yeah.
Yeah, the cats only live half as long as the other tigers. When they die, they'll have like 3 livers and 4 lungs, and
they're
so messed up inside.
Carol, I was surprised to read on your website that there is an online trade of wild cat fur.
Is this the...
The eBay thing?
Yeah.
What? Tell us about that.
I was just amazed. This woman had contacted me, and she said that she was writing a guide. She sells fur, and she was writing a guide to let people know that a lot of these animals are endangered species that they were trading on eBay. And so she contacted me because our website has all of those pictures, as you may have seen, hundreds mm-hmm. and hundreds of pictures of cats. And we supplied the photographs for this guide and then the descriptions of the animals and where they're from and what their endangered status is. And as a result, she was able to get eBay to accept that as one of their guides online. And so now when people buy a fur, it's one of those things where it comes up. If you shop on eBay, sometimes you'll see a little guide will come up and say, you need to know more about this product. And so that way, people that didn't know they were dealing in illegal furs were able to see that they were, and some of the people have been willing to take down their ads when they saw that. And then another thing that we do is we have our volunteers, and a lot of times I'll sit up at night until 2 o'clock in the morning reporting all of the illegal sales, and we just keep hammering away at it at eBay until they have finally really taken a strong stand against it. So you almost never find an endangered species fur for sale now on eBay.
What is regulation of big cats? Why does it matter to people who don't own exotic animals? What can you tell them?
There are so many cases of people being mauled and killed, animals escaping. There's been 653 incidents involving big cats just since 1990 in the U.S.
Really? 653? We don't hear about all of that, do we?
No.
You know, it's something where I started keeping track. And these are just things that I'm hearing about in the newspaper headlines because there's no organization that tracks that. And so those are just the ones that we've been able to find. And those have resulted in 19 people being killed, and 4 of those people were children. And then there's been another 171 of them that were mauled. There's been 134 escapes. And, you know, when the cats escape, they usually get killed. And so it's just been a horrible situation where, you know, when these animals get loose, the people that end up paying for that are the taxpayers, because the people who own these animals are often living hand-to-mouth. They can't afford the animals. Sometimes they'll just turn them loose when they can't use them anymore. And it always comes back to the taxpayer to have to pick up the bill. And with some of the other exotic animals, like the reptiles and the birds, I don't know about California, but boy, Florida is just overrun with stuff.
Is it really?
Pythons eating alligators here. It's just crazy.
That is unbelievable. That is unbelievable. Sorry, I was moved my head there a little bit. Well, we're going to take another short break, and when we come back, I want to talk to you about, aren't diseases involved with these people keeping these animals in, you know, their apartments in Manhattan? And tell us a little bit more about that.
Just one more thing: what you mentioned about the falling to the taxpayers. Again, people need to get involved, because even if they're not compassionate about the animals themselves, it's going to cost them. And again, money talks, right?
Exactly. Exactly. We'll be right back.